And Larry Dossey, our guest, your phone calls, all that's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Dossey. You ready for some calls?
Yeah, let's do it, George.
Let's pick it up by going to Los Angeles, first of all, and we'll go to Chad. Chad, you are up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Chad.
Hey, guys, what's up? I had a lucid dream last week, and I never really believed that they were real, but I found myself in my backyard looking down at the grass, and it was linoleum. And I said, I remember saying in my dream, why is that linoleum? And I said, wait a minute, I'm dreaming. And then it was a weird change. And then first thing I did was try and fly, and I was able to, and it was really fun. But then I think I flew out of the space of, as far as my dream, my brain had drawn around me, and so it reset me back in. So I was wondering, is there any way I could practice getting back into that again?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought you were going there with a premonition, but there's nothing about that dream, Chad, that makes me think that that was a premonition. It's just so symbolic that I hardly know what to say about your dream.
Is there any way to become self-aware within the dream? I guess that's where I was going with that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, there are techniques certainly to become aware of dreams. There. If I were you, I would get a book on lucid dreaming, and the goal of lucid dreaming is to be aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming. There are ways to cultivate this that have been worked out over the past 20 or 30 years, some really excellent work that's been done. So if you want to become self-aware or aware that you're dreaming while you're dreaming, there are certainly ways to go about it.
Thank you.
The book is on lucid dreaming.
What generally, with a dream of premonition, when does it generally occur? How far out? You dream on a Monday, when does the event actually happen?
Yeah, most of them are within 72 hours or so.
Really? Okay.
And some are, as the example that we talked about earlier of Amanda, who rescued her baby from the falling chandelier, that was a dream that took place within just a couple of hours for fruition. So most of them are restrained within about 72 hours.
Next up, let's go to Jeff in Topeka, Kansas, first-time caller. Hi, Jeff.
I had a question about, I have a past memory of reincarnation early as a kid, before 3 years old, and then got saved at three since I had seizures, and then just due to the pain, and then at four I had tried to save someone that was going to die, and that would be the president in 63. I called the FBI and then the Louisville Police Department. That made the news, the police department, and then I had mentioned two things, and then I got followed around by the government at five. And then but I was wondering about prophetic things after that. And then I had a foreknowledge since then. And I was wondering if religious, trying to stay religious since then and seeing things during the day. My visions would come during the day, like what was coming over the news about Kennedy, about him taking the top when I was even 4 years old. I just said, well, you should take the top. They were debating over the news like 3 days before if he should take the top or shouldn't take the top because it was bulletproof. And I just knew he should take the bulletproof top. So I called the FBI and they hung up on me after they found out how old it was. And the secret is that there was someone coming from Kansas, and then there was someone already in Texas. And they've microwaved me many times before I was even 10, and since 95 when I started reporting to them, trying to be a good guy. And so I'm working on peace, not being terrorized.
No, I can see that, and you seem like you've touched it all.
I've reported a lot of stuff trying to be a good guy while still being, tortured and terrorized by Cheney and Pelosi. When they reported they had a prophetic day on the Hill with Pelosi, and then
sometimes you got to be very careful what you tell these people. You just never know. But long story short, here, Larry, I mean,
Yeah.
You got to be careful sometimes who you say these things to.
Actually, that's true. People have often paid a huge social price for going public with these sorts of things. One thing we keep coming back to here is the website for the Arlington Institute, where people like Ian can enter their premonitions and their prophetic dreams and visions without any consequences at all. This is one of the great services that this site affords people. You don't have to phone up anybody in the government. You can describe your premonitions or your prophetic visions there, and it will enter the database, and you have the satisfaction of having made a contribution, potentially, if patterns and processes that make sense can be found in this database. So I think you might consider that as a recourse.
Let's go to Rachel in Los Angeles on our wildcard line. Hello, Rachel. Good morning.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good.
Thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I've talked to you, George, a couple of times regarding the feelings, intuitions, and things.
Yeah.
We had an experience of collective premonition, and it was regarding the earthquake that happened on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Culver. We felt it a little bit in Culver City. But the crazy thing about it was that I had gone in and was sitting and had mentioned, feels like we're going to have an earthquake. And then there was somebody else that came up, and they were holding, like, their chest area, like, solar plexus area, and said, I don't really feel too good. And sure enough, 10 minutes later, the floor moved sideways. That's the best I could explain it. And I said, there you go, there it is. And only took a little quarter, but then somebody else came in and said, yeah, they had a 4.4 where they had it. I don't remember where they had it right now. So, and then, chakras. I've been doing a lot of, like, a chakra balancing and things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if Dr. Dossie thinks that chakras, because where he was holding was his solar plexus, I think the intuition is supposed to come from the third eye between your eyebrows, the point between your eyebrows. However, does he believe that chakras and intuition premonition go together?
Well, all right, let's find out.
Yeah, Rachel, I have a horrible connection with you, and I only heard about every other word that you said, and I'm not able to respond to you.
Well, what do you know about chakras?
Well, I think chakras are energy centers whose existence is attested to by a lot of people and also some fairly respectable scientific work. So I'm open to the whole idea.
Okay, next up, let's go to Fairlawn, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Les, good morning.
Good morning. Whenever I hear someone talking about premonitions or telepathy, I tend to think of Schumann waves. Is it possible that some people can tune into the Schumann waves produced by the Earth and therefore know something that most other people don't?
Well, this idea has been circulated as a possible candidate to explain premonitions and all sorts of extrasensory perception for an awful long time. I don't know if it's possible or not. I think that the Schumann wave folks have a lot of explaining to do about acquiring information that's displaced in time. I don't know any way that any waveform could bring information back from the future. I just can't see how that would happen. First, more than that, there's evidence and the healing work for retrotemporal action. We don't know any way that any energetic phenomenon can flow backwards in time. So although the energetic waveforms have been offered by a lot of serious people as a possible explanation for these non-local ways of knowing, I just think the burden of proof is on people who put that idea forward to explain how it could happen. I can't see it myself.
Okay, thanks, Les. George in Vancouver, Canada. There you are. Hey, George.
Hello. Good morning.
Sure thing.
I have a question for you.
You said
there's 20% people on the plane before they hit the towers?
Yeah.
how many people actually did not show up for work that day? And I have another question.
Well, that's another good question.
Yeah, I don't know if those two facts are related or not. I suspect that they are, but I think we just, I personally don't have the data in order to correlate those two bodies of evidence. You know, I think that if people had premonitions that were strong enough to warn them away from flying that day, it's only reasonable to suspect that people would have had premonitions about not going to work for the same reason.
When that first happened, we thought there were 30,000 people in those buildings, and a lot of people got out or a lot of people did not show up, Larry.
I know it, and I've heard those stories too. You know, I just think that we need to take those 12 million hits of dreams of 9/11 much more seriously than we have done so far. I mean, I think we're sitting on a potential goldmine of data here, understanding the survival mechanism of premonitions. And it's just a shame not to be open to exploring that database. I hope the time comes when the airlines will release information about ridership on those four planes in the weeks and months prior. I have a friend who has explored this whole idea of premonitions around 9/11, Rupert Sheldrake, the British
biologist. Sure, absolutely.
I'm sure he's been on your show before.
He has, and did you know he was stabbed about a year ago?
I attended him in the emergency room, George.
You did that?
Yeah, I did. I live in Santa Fe, and Rupert's a good friend, and I went to the emergency room and helped.
God, he was lucky.
Yeah, I know. He's lucky to be alive.
Absolutely.
Exactly right.
Absolutely. George, you had another question.
Yes, I have a reoccurring dream that's been driving me nuts, and so far it hasn't occurred, and that's a date with Jessica Alba.
say again, I didn't get it.
He's had a reoccurring dream about a date with Jessica Alba. How can we have that dream?
I'm really disappointed it's not happening.
Well, you know, it's sometimes these things take a while.
You want it to be a premonition dream, that's why.
You got that right.
Well, you know, all of these things are not about unpleasant circumstances, as we've been saying.
Absolutely. Back to Los Angeles. Hello, Bob. Your turn.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was living in Europe in the 1960s, and I made an unexpected trip to Amsterdam on the night boat going from England to Amsterdam. And in Amsterdam, I normally was invited to stay with friends who were performers, and thereby we would be out all night, and I never got to go to a museum or anything. So I thought, this time I'll get a chance to check into a hotel, and before they know I'm here, I'll get to go see some Rembrandts or do some of the things that normal tourists get to do, which I had never done as much as I'd been in Amsterdam. I was having breakfast by a canal, and as I was having coffee, I was dreaming off into the distance and imagining seeing my friend, my host, walk across the opposite bank of the canal wearing a suit, which I'd never seen him wear, and carrying a briefcase. Since he was a performer, he never was dressed like a businessman. Walk across the bridge, and when he'd see me, this is all in my daydream, he would stop and say, Bob, what are you doing in Amsterdam? And I would not recall what I would say, but then he'd say, well, of course, you're going to stay with us. And there I would be at his house. So I finished my coffee, paid for my breakfast, looked up, and there he was walking across the opposite side of the canal wearing exactly what I saw in this daydream, because I have a very visual memory, and carrying a briefcase with papers coming out of it, and said exactly what he'd said 20 minutes before in my daydream. And I said, what are you doing up early? And he said he had an audition for a show he was producing, and he therefore had to dress like a businessman. And he was so shocked by my story that he called off the meeting until later, until he could compose himself. What could you say about that happening?
I think you had a humdinger. I mean, this is one of those jaw-dropping, eye-popping premonitions. It's not clear that it was related to anybody's survival. It didn't warn you of anything unpleasant like the majority of premonitions do. But as we've discussed tonight, these things come in all flavors. You know, one of the perplexing things is that one night a dream can warn us of an approaching tsunami, and the next night we'll have a dream about where we misplaced our glasses. So they do range from everything from something really colossal to something really utterly trivial, and yours seems to be sort of in between.
Why can't we ever dream, though, about where we put our car keys, Larry?
I'm working on that, George.
That just doesn't seem to happen. Bob, thank you for yours. Where do you get the book, by the way, The Power of Premonitions?
Well, it's in every bookstore in America, every major bookstore, and it's also in the usual online sources such as Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and Borders.com.
You enjoy writing, too, don't you?
I love it. You know, it's just the juice of my existence. I have a good day when I have time to sit down in front of a word processor with no interruptions. That's heaven for me.
Did you see where Oprah apologized, kind of, to James Fry?
No.
Did you hear about that?
I know.
Yeah. I mean, no one's denying that he didn't fudge a little bit.
Yeah.
But
right.
I guess she felt bad, and she apologized.
You want to hear an Oprah connection to this book?
Sure.
I was in Oprah's studio last year, and we were filming some programs for her satellite radio station. And after the interviews, she said, "Larry, what are you working on now?" And at that time, this book did not have a name. I was just finishing it up. And I said, "Well, I'm writing a book on premonitions." And she said, "Ah, The Power of Premonitions."
I love it. There's the title.
And I thought, Jesus, I think that's it. So I ran it by the publishers. They loved it. So Oprah named the book, and I have had the opportunity since then to tell her she named the book, and she was quite happy about that.
Chris in Seattle, Washington, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Hi.
You know, my story, series of events could easily be a topic in your book. I was actually drifting off to sleep, and the material quickly got me out of my napping mode and had to wake up and call in. About a year and a half ago, I had found a crystal, kind of an obelisk form, more of a piece of a large crystal, and that I misplaced for years. And I wasn't really praying with it, but I was actually studying it for over an hour one day, kind of putting it in the sun and just thinking about it and using the rays of the sun to actually form pictures on the wall. And almost daydreaming, you know. I would kind of like when you look at clouds and you can see faces in the clouds, kind of doing that. And I almost saw like a story on my wall that day. And what ended up happening over the next course of 3 or 4 days after that is phenomenal. And I had sort of been on down and out. I hadn't been working for a while because of illness, and the debt was really mounting. And I had also been reading, I think, a book on, intention. And so I thought, well, gosh, I'm going to go ahead and give it a try. So every night for about 3 nights, I would hold that crystal and just kind of think about what it is that I want, what I need, but I would give it an exact figure in my mind. This is the exact amount of money that I need. Like you guys were saying, you were talking about not being greedy. This is what I need to be comfortable and pay my bills and hopefully get me through this, spell where I'm ill. And lo and behold, within a week's time, I got a phone call from a friend I hadn't heard from in a while. And he had a deal where he needed to sell something that was worth quite a bit of money. It was actually a website. George, you might have remembered about a year and a half ago, I told you this story.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually hired me on a commission basis to sell this website, and I got $250,000 for him.
See, there you go. It does happen. It does happen. We're going to be right back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final questions with Larry Dossey on Coast to Coast. On our next Coast to Coast program, the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe, joins us. So gather around the campfire and get ready for Lionel. When we come back, final phone calls with Larry Dossey on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Larry Dossey, final phone calls, and then here we go. Do you make speaking engagements at all, Larry? Do you go around the country?
Yeah, I have a very active lecture life, George. I have the opportunity to talk to really thousands of doctors every year at hospitals and medical schools around the country, and also lay audiences all over the place.
Good for you. Okay, back to the calls. Let's go to Fontana, California. Hello, Joe. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You are up with us. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, George. Hey, Larry. How are you guys?
Hi.
I just had a real quick story It wasn't like nothing too major. It's just like a little premonition, I guess, because what I do is I collect little Star Wars collectibles or whatever. And there's like a while, I couldn't find this one single, like a little starship or whatever. And then one night I had a dream to where like I went to to the store, the Toys R Us. And then I was like walking through the store, and I went to the section where they have it, and I was looking through these boxes. And then away in the back, I found it. I'm like, oh, right, I found it. And then the next morning, I went to work, and I was like, well, that's a pretty weird dream. You know, I dream about a toy and about finding it. And then so then after I got out of work, I said, you know what, might as well just go and check it out. I had a dream to see if it works. And then went to the local Toys R Us, and then I walked in there, and I was like, you know, this is exactly how my dream was. And then I went to where it was at, and I looked behind the boxes, and sure enough, it was there. It was just a little different, not like too heavy of a dream, but just a little, just the one stock throw that out there.
That's pretty cool, because there's a huge literature on the use of dreams and premonitions in finding lost objects. These go way back, I think, in history, even in pre-modern times, where people would lose cattle or something like that. You know, it was essential to their livelihood. And then they would go to the medicine man. The medicine man would have the big dream about where the lost object or the lost cattle were located. So there's just a huge history of using premonitions to find lost objects.
Okay, very good. Next up, let's go to Mike in Memphis, Tennessee, first-time caller. Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Good.
I had a question for Dr. Dossie here. I've never really had a full-blown dream and then had it come true later on, but I've had instances as a child and especially as an adult. I work in law enforcement, and a lot of times, you know, we'll be dealing with something, and you'll get that kind of that gut feeling or that kind of the hair on the back of your neck will stand up and something just doesn't seem right. And then, you know, you'll check in on it and it kind of pans out that there was a problem there. And I guess my question is kind of that sixth sense, that kind of that short term where you have a feeling and then it comes true. Is that the same thing as a premonition where you dream it and then you have a long, maybe a time frame before it comes to fruition?
Yeah, I think that we make a mistake if we too hastily consider all premonitions necessarily dreams. That's just not the case. Certainly dreams are one of the major avenues for premonitions, but these things really crop up in waking life also, just as you describe them. They can be hunches, gut feelings, very strong obsessions. You know you should do something and different than you're habitually used to and this sort of thing. I just, day before yesterday, got an email from a woman who was driving along that highway up in Minnesota last year.
Oh, when the bridge collapsed?
The bridge collapsed.
Yep.
And for reasons that she couldn't figure out, she just had an obsession to take a different route. And she could not overcome this compulsion. She had no idea that a bridge was collapsing or had collapsed, and she yielded to the compulsion and took another route, and she thinks very likely may have saved her life. So we often have these feelings that we don't know what they mean, but they exert a tug on us, and as we've said many times in this conversation tonight, if they really are very vivid and they just have that ring of truth, if they feel realer than real, it really is wise to pay attention to them.
Do you think ancients also had this ability?
I have no doubt about it. I think this stuff goes way back to almost the beginning of this species. I'm glad you bring up the ancients. It suggests Old Testament time periods and so on. You cannot read the Old Testament without running smack dab into premonitions. They're called prophecy often. But, you know, dreams and visions are just so common in Old Testament times that they really are part of their religious legacy.
Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Gina, it's your turn.
Hi, George. Hi, Larry.
First, hi.
I hope you guys are having a great night. And I really want to thank you both for using the gifts that you have to help people to better understand the things that they're going through.
Very good.
Now, Larry, I had a question for you because I'm able to dream in black and white.
Yeah.
And color. And I have a lot of reoccurring dreams. But what I'm able to do, if it's a dream that really gets on my nerves and frustrates me, I'll think about it throughout the day because it'll be annoying. So if I have myself thinking about the dream was or what was the purpose of the dream, I'm able to change it in my favor, like by the third go-round.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's so much of a spiritual connection, like a warning and like, hey, you can turn this around, or does this mean like spiritually I'm strong enough to turn these things around, because it's not necessarily like if someone's going to attack me, I don't hurt the person, but I'm able to defend myself and turn it around so this person had like no motivation.
Well, that's beautiful. You know, we were talking earlier about the future not being fixed. We talked about a probabilistic future that could be shifted one way or another, that people see maybe as the most probable future in their premonition, but that doesn't mean that it's fixed. And your experience with your dream suggests that, you know, there's so much probability lying about in our conscious visions of what could be, what lies ahead, and so on, that it takes only a little nudge with an intention to shove it in one way or another. To me, this suggests that our will, our judgments, and our wishes and wants really are effective in shaping our reality, and which is a concept I doubt that many people listening to us on this program find very strange at all.
It is amazing how the mind works. Truly amazing, Larry.
I know.
Next up, let's go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Dennis, hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
All right, I had a question. Basically, it's involving premonition versus CYOR, which is like creating your own reality.
All right.
You know, it's saying basically, like, do we see the future coming, or are we creating the future? And to me, that's really not important, I guess. It's more or less that we're experiencing a connection with a higher power, that we're in touch, and that we're able to see, like, visions or prayer, like, you know, symbols, like, through this higher power.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting into, I guess, is I believe in the power of healing with words or thoughts. So my question is, can it act in reverse? And, you know, I remember when I was younger, we used to have a thing called Speak and Spell. It was like a learning tool.
Mm-hmm.
And then I look now, and I, you know, I hear about a witch, how she would cast a spell. And then you look into, like, a forecast or the newscast. And, you know, my concern is basically if we hear words over, like, disastrous or dangerous, if we hear that, do we break it down? Does it come to be disaster us? And if, you know, everyone collectively hears that and they believe that and they hear disaster us, can these wishes or wants or these words then affect us negatively, and is mass media being used to do that?
Yeah, I wrote a book once on the negative side of intentionality and prayer. It was called a book, the book was called Be Careful What You Pray For. The reason I wrote it was because I came across a Gallup poll which asked Americans how they prayed, and in this poll, 5% of Americans admitted that they prayed for harm for other people. I found that very disturbing and began to look into this.
Yes.
And I think that there clearly is evidence for a dark side to this. People can shift things in a negative direction and experiments looking at growth effects on bacteria and all sorts of things. So I think it's under the wire. There is a dark side to this. The question is, what do we do with that? Are we just sitting ducks, you know, and as targets for people's negative thoughts, intentions, and so on? The answer is decidedly no. If you go back and look at all the cultures who believe that hexes and curses and spells were possible, which is most cultures, they also had the evolution of methods of protection that grew up alongside this belief. So they never considered themselves just innocent targets in the way that many people today consider themselves helpless in the wake of these things. They had means of protection. If you look at the prayers that have arisen in the Judeo-Christian tradition, there are many prayers of protection that guard people against the malevolent thoughts and wishes of other people. The Lord's Prayer is one of those. If you look at that clause in the Lord's Prayer, so which says, deliver us from evil, that's a prayer of protection. The 23rd Psalm is a prayer of protection. Images surrounding oneself with white light, which many people use as a healing tool now, is considered by many people to be protective. So we do not have to just consider ourselves willing targets, even though this business of a dark side to intentions is, I think, very real.
Okay, let's take some calls. Final ones. Everett Washington. Hello, Robert. You're up with us.
How's it going?
Good.
I want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
And, my question is, sometimes when I dream, I can control it. And I was wondering, have you ever heard of people controlling their dreams to a certain extent? And I know sometimes when I'm dreaming and maybe I'm being chased by something bad, I'll stop and tell myself, you're dreaming, wake up, and then end up waking up.
Well, yes. You know, a moment ago we mentioned that one can become aware that one is dreaming while one is dreaming. This is called lucid dreaming. And also there are strategies for controlling the content of dreams. And even after waking up, occasionally people develop strategies whereby they deliberately, voluntarily re-enter their dream and complete the dream according to a better way, a better outcome. They just don't leave the dream dangling. I would suggest a book for people who are interested in learning how to do this, a book by Stephen LaBerge called Lucid Dreaming. It goes into all of these techniques.
That's nice, because I know sometimes, like you said, I would wake up from a dream, and I end up going back to sleep and continuing the dream, like you said. So that's all I had. I want to say thank you.
Okay, Robert, absolutely.
Yeah, thanks,
back to the dark side for a moment, Larry.
Yeah.
Don't you think there's like a boomerang effect to the person who tries to use it?
Yeah, I know there is. Actually, I found evidence for that in the Kahuna tradition in Hawaii. They had a tradition, actually it still goes on, I'm told, by some people. It was actually called the death prayer. And the Kahuna shamans would occasionally try to pray to death someone at a distance. And part of the lore was that you better be careful with this because this stuff can boomerang on you and you may become the unwilling victim yourself. So they had these elaborate protective processes and rituals whereby they, every time they tried to use the death prayer, they tried also to protect themselves to prevent it from boomeranging on them. This is part of the lore of the negative side of this stuff.
Driving around in Indiana, we've got Craig on Coast to Coast. Craig, good morning.
Good morning, sir. I have a question about the creativity part of your brain. I guess you call it the left side brain, the artists, musicians, people like that, always seem to say, well, you know, a lot of times they, you know, kind of came to me in a dream or it was a hunch or it was inspiration. They use that word.
Yeah.
And I've listened to people that play poker for a living, and they say the same kind of thing. Well, I just knew it was going to be, or I thought it was going to, you know, I followed my hunch, or, you know, some people call it luck or whatever. But I wonder if you ever looked into that, and is it really one side of the brain working harder than the other? Or,
well, I think we really don't know which parts of the brain to link up with premonitions. There has been early work on it, but it isn't really definitive. But the link to creativity is very real. If you look at some of the histories of inventions, you find that many of them were revealed in dreams and premonitions. There's a long list of these things.
Right, right.
You know, so part of the creativity history links up with premonitions, and not always out of dreams, but in reverie or when people just run up into an intellectual barrier and they don't know where to go with their creativity, they just give up. And then it's sometimes at that moment where they just park their intellect and turn off the motor and shift into some other form of awareness that the answers come. So I think there are profound connections between creativity and premonitions.
Larry, tell us the story of the no-shows at the choir at the church.
Well, this just knocked my socks off when I heard about
this.
This was an actual event which took place on March 1st, 1950, in a little town nobody's ever heard of called Beatrice, Nebraska. It's in the southeast part of the state. On this night, there were 15 choir members who were supposed to get together at the Westside Baptist Church for choir practice at 7:20. But on this particular night, nobody showed up. It was the only time in the whole history of this church where there was a complete no-show. And at 7:25, the church blew up.
Oh, my God.
It exploded. The roof came straight down. The walls went straight out. It was a natural gas explosion, just a sheer accident. And nobody was hurt, George, because nobody was there.
But there should have been people there.
There should have been people there. And this was actually written up in Life magazine, which was huge in America in 1950. And overnight, reporters descended on this little town, and they interviewed all 15 choir members. As it turned out, not a single one of them had a clue that the church was going to blow up. They just stayed away because of trivial reasons. For example, you know, listening to a radio broadcast that went overtime, or finishing ironing or doing homework, a car wouldn't start. I mean, these were trivial, mundane reasons. But I suggest that these people had some sort of unconscious, linked awareness that functioned off the stage of awareness that motivated them to stay away. You know, we've talked about the survival function of
premonition. It kicks in.
And this is it in spades.
And collectively, too.
I love this because this isn't just an individual story. This affected 15 people simultaneously.
It truly does. Truly does. Your next work, what will it be?
I think I'm going to do another book on premonitions and explore some areas that I neglected in this book. Because this is such a huge, rich topic, I haven't completely plumbed it yet.
Well, see, Oprah gave you the name of this one, so the next one should be something like, I knew that. You like that?
George, I think that could be it.
It could be your seller. You never know. Larry, first of all, thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, it's just been a joy. Thanks for having me, George.
Absolutely marvelous. You make us think, and now a lot of us can go dream and write it down the next morning, right?
Well, I hope so.
All right. You take care.
You too.
Larry Dossey, again, the name of his book, Extraordinary Work, The Power of Premonitions, How Knowing the Future Can Shape Our Lives. His website, DosseyDossey.com, DosseyDossey.com, linked up at Coast to Coast AM. Fascinating program on tour for you tomorrow, The Greatest Storyteller Ever Born. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.